Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Meditation itself isn't hard. Meditation is really like just being with yourself. But it's your true self. So let's say you get home and you've had a really hard day at school, okay? And you took exams that you weren't prepared for and it all went wrong and you don't know exactly what your grade was, but you feel like I didn't do well in the exam. And maybe you had a fight with your best friend and just everything from morning till night, from morning till afternoon felt like it went really wrong. So you come home and you're feeling very upset and very stressed and you decide, I'm going to take a hot bath. Now, I know that's not exactly something 9-year-olds usually do, but when you get older, a hot bath is going to sound like the perfect answer to that. But here's the thing. When you go to take a hot bath, and when you get into the bath, there's a sense, and again, probably you haven't yet experienced this, which is good, but you will someday. You get into the bath and you go, ah. And it's just this beautiful sense of relaxation. But what's the most important thing to do before you get in the bathtub? In order for it to be nice. Very good. Look at that. My star student. Yes, exactly. Take off your clothes. Because a bath with all of your clothes on, if you got into the bathtub with your school uniform and your shoes on, it wouldn't feel very relaxing. So what meditation really is like taking off all of your clothes so that you can have the experience of, ah. But instead of just having it in your body, you have it very, very deeply inside of you. You have it in your heart, you have it in your soul, you have it in your spirit. You feel like, ah, I've come back. I've come back to who I am. But in order to do that, you have to take off the rest of the stuff. And what the rest of the stuff is who I think I am. So like, I could look at you right now and I could say, so if somebody asks me, so what is Hari Om's body like? And I would say, well, he's got a nice zip-up hoodie and a pair of, blue track pants. But we know that's not your body. Those are just the clothes you've put on your body today. Tomorrow you'll put different clothes on. If we really wanted to know what your body looked like, and don't worry, we won't make you do it, I would actually make you take off all your clothes because only then would we have a clear sense of what your body looks like. And in the same way, when we want to have a sense of who we are, well, we have to take off the stuff that looks like us, like your sweatshirt and your sweatpants look like you, but they're not you. You know that. You know that there isn't actually a naked body under that, like under all of our clothes. And in the same way that there's a naked body under your clothes, There's a real you under the things that you think are Hariyam. So you think, okay, I'm 9 and I'm British and I'm a boy and I'm in fifth grade. Okay, he's in fifth grade. And I'm my parents' son, and if you have a sister or brother, you're their brother, you're your best friend's best friend. So those are all the things that you think of yourself. Maybe I'm good in math, not so good in art, or vice versa, however it may go. You think those are all who you are. But that's not who you are, any more than your hoodie is your body. These are all things that we've put on ourselves. They're identities that we've put on ourselves. Where we're from, what we look like, what our career is, what our relationships are. All of that stuff that we identify as, it's not who we are. It's the clothes that our identity is wearing. So just like right now you're wearing a hoodie, well, right now you're 9 and you're a boy and you're from England. But that's not who you are. Those are just the clothes that your being is wearing right now. And that's why we meditate. Because when you meditate, then suddenly there's no 9-year-old. There's no Britisher or Indian or American or Japanese or Chinese. There's no fifth grader or 12th grader or, you know, company CEO or principal of the school. There's none of that. There's just soul. So when we meditate, we take off that. And so all of the different practices, and when we come back to our meditation later, I'll guide you through a practice. But what's important to know is that's just one practice. Like you've got, you know, one hoodie and one pair of pants, and there's lots of different ways you could take them off. Like if I said to you, take off your hoodie, well, maybe you'd unzip it first. Maybe you wouldn't unzip it. Maybe you just pull it over your head like that. There's no right answer. There's no right way or wrong way to take off a sweatshirt. Just like there's no right way or wrong way to meditate. All that matters is you get it off. And in the same way in meditation, whatever technique or practice we may use, all that matters is it gets us free of who we think we are, gets us free of that identity. There's a wonderful story of three men who are stranded on an island, and they're praying to God that they should be saved. And one day they wake up and there's a canoe on the edge of the island, and they're very, very happy because, wow, now they're going to have a canoe and they can go back to the mainland and be safe. So they get in the canoe and they row it back to the mainland, and they're saved. And a couple of weeks later, someone sees them in the market in the village holding the canoe on their heads. And the three men are in a line and they've got the canoe on their head. And the person says, why is that canoe on your head? And they said, oh, you know, this canoe, it saved our life. We were stranded on the island, and this canoe, it was there, and it brought us back. And the person said, well, that's great, but why are you carrying it on your head? And they said, well, God, you know, this canoe, it saved our life, and we were stranded. And so, yes, the canoe was very important. It saved them. It brought them over the water from where they were lost back home. But the truth is, it didn't really matter if it was a canoe. It could have been a yacht, could have been jet skis, assuming they knew how to ride them, could have been a raft, could have been anything. Happened to be a canoe, but it could have been anything. All that mattered is that they were able to go across the water. And in the same way with meditation, you know, we get really stuck with our techniques. And just like the canoe becomes actually a hindrance once you're there, it's crucial to get you there. But once you're there, You want to be able to just be there, and holding a canoe on your head prevents you from being there. And in the same way, when we're meditating, we use techniques. We all may have different techniques that work for us in meditation. Mantras, breath, prayer, so many different techniques. But ultimately, the point is, once you experience meditation, once you experience that taking off of the clothes of you, you don't want to hold the technique like you're holding the canoe on your head. You want to be able to just be there. But what's important to remember, especially for those of you who have a meditation practice already, is whatever works. Just like there's no inherent hierarchy between a canoe or a rowboat or jet skis or a yacht to get you from an island back to the mainland. All that matters is it's there and you can use it. So whatever works for you to get you across that water, to get you into an experience of not having the clothes on so that you can get into that bath and go, ah, that's all you need to use.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on iOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. There's different levels to my being. So I have a physical body, my bones, my muscles, my skin, my organs, right? Now, my physical body keeps changing. The cells on my skin slough off every day and renew. My bones change. All of my whole body keeps changing. It's here. It's part of the fullness of creation. It's not separate from creation. It's just one layer, a very temporary layer, you could say, of my reality. It's in constant change, and it's only one aspect of the reality. And it's a very shallow level. I don't say that with a judgment, just shallow if you're looking at the depths of an ocean. It's a shallow level of existence, like waves on an ocean are on the surface but not deep within. So my physical existence is on the surface level of who I am. We go a step deeper, we get to our subtle bodies, which includes more subtle aspects of me, my mind, right? And we could go through all of this in more depth, but when we keep going, ultimately, What we connect with is that which is not bordered or boundaried by either the physical body or the subtle body or the impressions or the memories. So neither am I bounded by physically what happened, my physical body, nor am I bounded by the impression upon my mind of what happened. Yeah, it's on a deeper level. It's my subtle body versus physical body. But They're both bounded on some level. But when we keep going deeper or higher, depending on how you think, really, I mean, it's the same thing. Just for some of us, visually, it works to think about, you know, moving higher. For some of us, it works visually to think about going deeper. Either way, as I keep moving, what I get to is a layer that isn't bounded by any of that. And that's the layer of me, the truth of me, which is one with the divine. That just is. When we say, you know, aham brahmasmi, so hum. These are different sayings, different mantras that get around the concept of so am I. I am that. I am God. All is God. But that's on one level of awareness. Absolutely. It's the highest, the deepest, the truest. It's just not the level that most of us are able to access all the time. And so when we talk about creating our reality, you're right. I'm not talking about creating it on that level. On that level, there is nothing to create. On that level, there just is. There are no thoughts on that level. There are no destinations on that level. I'm already there. I never was not there. There never was an I who thought about being there or not being there. You see where it goes. It's exquisite. It's just very hard to hold for any extended period of time and get your shopping done and get your emails done and remember to stay in your lane on the freeway. And so we also are aware of and interact with the different levels. They're all part of the same existence. You can kind of think of it, you know, maybe as different like TV channels operating simultaneously, radio channels. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to conceptualize it. Absolutely, with the we are all divine, there is nothing but God being the highest and the truest. But also here we are in this other existence, which is also true. At this intersection of time and space. And so how can we maneuver that? Because how I maneuver this determines my access to that layer. I have to go through my experience in the subtle body, my experience in the physical body, to experience that. The medium of that experience is my very physical brain. Cut my brain out, I cannot have the experience of being one with God. Is my brain God? No, of course not. It's a mass of gray and white matter. But it's the medium through which I experience it.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Join us here on the holy banks of Mother Ganga, in the lap of the towering and beautiful Himalayas, for our annual International Yoga Festival, taking place from March 1st to March 7th every year. Come join your global yoga family in a true union of yourself with your divine self. We look forward to welcoming you all. You can go to the website on www.internationalyogafestival.org. Look forward to welcoming you all home to the banks of Mother Ganga.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. First of all, what you said about your questions and coming here and forgetting them, just I want to share a story with you about this, because yes, we come each night, we sit, we do questions, we do answers. It's wonderful, it's a special time. But it's also very important to allow, when you're here in this place, to allow for the possibility of actually the questions answering themselves. And so I wanted to just share a personal story with you, which was when I first came here, Pooja Swamiji used to give darshan for a very specific, it was a 1 hour slot that he would give darshan. And literally at that hour, he would stand up and go. And if you didn't have a chance to see him, you could come back at the next darshan time. And it was for anybody with anything. So it wasn't even always spiritual questions. A lot of times it was people who had come in from abroad, from other places to visit, and you know, maybe it was even a personal aspect of life, needing guidance on something happening in a personal life, anything. So I used to go and I would sit, and inevitably the hour ran out before the people ran out, which was fine because I was in this just incredible state of ecstatic intoxication and couldn't have completed a coherent sentence if I had tried. And so it was perfect. I just wanted to sit in his presence. But after a few days, I hear, and I would close my eyes and just meditate. And after a few days, I hear him say, yes. And I open my eyes and he's sitting and the room is empty, everybody's done. And I think, oh my God, okay. And I was an academic. And I was not just an academic, but I was a front row question asker academic. I mean, I was the person in your 250 person lecture hall at 8 a.m. sitting in the front row who actually had questions. And I couldn't think of anything. I mean, my brain was just, and when I got back to my room later, I mean, there's more to the story that I'm not going to go into now for the shortage of time, but later when I got back into my room, I realized I need to have questions. I'm like, I looked like just a bubbling idiot. I mean, he doesn't even know me, and look, I couldn't even say anything. And no questions? I mean, who has no questions, right? So I sat in my room, and I thought of questions. And I went back, and again, the time ran out before the people ran out. But a few days later, again, there we were. And I'm looking at him and I realize I can't remember any of my questions. And I had thought of them again every time before I went in. I mean, it wasn't like I'd thought about it days before and not again. Every time before I went in, I was prepared. I know my questions. And he looked at me and I could not remember a question. So again, mortified, I then decided, well, I'm going to write them down. And I'm going to, we didn't have, you know, smartphones at the time. I'm going to write them down. And I made a list. And the next time it happened, I thought, well, thank God I've got my list. And I had used to have just a little purse, one of those just little woven, you know, bags. They sell them in the market, a little square one. I didn't have much that I carried around. I had a room key. And that was pretty much it. So I didn't even need a purse, but I carried it. And in my purse, well, it's important to know that it wasn't like a bag that most of us carry now that's got 1,000 things in it. I mean, there was nothing in my bag except my room key and maybe chapstick and my list, because immediately after I wrote it, I put it in my bag. And I opened my bag and there's no list. And there was no point even like turning it upside down. There was nothing in the bag. There was my room key. And there weren't any secret pockets. There were no secret component. There was nothing. Wasn't there. And I said to him, I said, I must have dropped it somewhere along the way. Do you have 2 minutes? Can I come right back? And he smiled. He said, sure. So I literally run back to my room. I'm looking on the path. It's not there. I run back to my room, scouring my room. It's nowhere. And I literally start throwing sheets off my bed. I took my pillow out of my pillowcase as though somehow my list would have fallen into my pillowcase. Everything. And there's no list. And I finally had to just come back. I'm so embarrassed, and said to him, and he looked at me and he said, yes. And it was just this, yes. Like, there are no questions. Yes. There had been questions. It wasn't, you know, you crazy woman. You invented the fact that you wrote a list. He knew. Yes, there had been questions. And yes, now there were no questions. And that for me to drive myself crazy, trying to go back to the moment when there were questions, was not being true to the present moment in which there were no questions. And it was such a powerful, powerful teaching. So I wanted to just share that with you. But on the level of attachment and non-attachment in our relationships, well, this is true regardless of whether, as you say, it's a householder or whether you simply move through the world. We have expectations. We have expectations of how people are going to treat us, and whether they happen to be our spouses or children or in-laws, or they happen to be our employers or employees, or they happen to be our elected officials, or the whole spectrum. We have expectations of how people are going to behave, how they're going to act, what they're going to do, how the universe is going to act. We have expectations of justice. We have expectations that when I plan a picnic in the summertime, in the dry season, it's not going to rain. And we're attached to that, meaning when our expectation is not fulfilled, we're upset. Varying degrees of upset depending on what the expectation was. So I have an expectation that when I wake up tomorrow morning, my loved ones are still going to be alive. I have an attachment to that expectation being fulfilled. If I wake up tomorrow morning and discover my loved ones are not alive, I'm going to be more upset than if it rained on my picnic. But they're all expectations that we have of the universe. And whether you're looking at getting along with a spouse or a child or an in-law, or you're looking at getting along with the universe, the lesson is really always the same, which is you have no control over anything other than yourself. We try to exert more control, to manipulate more control in our close relationships. But you don't actually have more control. And so the more that I hook my peace, my well-being, in another person's actions or the weather's actions or nature's actions, earthquakes, fires, illnesses. I mean, that's not an action. It's not that somebody waved a magic wand and said, "There shall be a fire." Just it happened. But the more that I hook my peace in the actions of others, the more difficult my life is going to be. Yeah, there'll be moments that are wonderful. There'll be moments when everything goes exactly according to how I want it to be, and I'm high. But then there's going to be moments when it doesn't. And so this is where it's so important for my own well-being, regardless of whether I'm a householder or a sannyasi. It doesn't matter. I still have to have the universe. You still interact in the world. You live in a cave, well, all right, there it's going to be the snakes and it's going to be the scorpions and it's going to be the other people in other caves, whoever it's going to be. The villagers you're begging for food. We all have these. And the more that I can unhook my peace from anything outside of myself, the greater chance of peace I have in my life. The greater chance of joy I have in my life. And it's really interesting because we really think, most of us do, that other people are the ones who bring us joy or pain. So, in a good way, God, it's so nice to be with you. You make, you know, you bring me so much joy. Or the flip side, I was so peaceful and then you came home. You know, couldn't you have stayed out a little bit longer? The day was going so well. But in either case, really all they're doing is triggering reactions within ourselves. And the reason that we know this is if something is actually impacting us from it. So, you know, the example I always give on this is the air conditioner. The air conditioner is actually giving you cold air. If you stand close to it, you get a lot of cold air. The farther away from the air conditioner you move, the less cold air you get. There's a direct line between amount of cold air on your face and your proximity to the air conditioner. But if somebody makes you happy, and then they get up and they go to the kitchen, you're not less happy. You go to the store to get something, you're not less happy. Similarly, someone steals your peace, all you've got to do is picture them, and your peace is gone. They could be on another continent. And all you've got to do, I mean, I can't tell you how many people, you know, come to me individually or in satsang, and the problem is someone who's making them miserable, and it turns out that person is, you know, hundreds of miles away or thousands of miles away, or has passed away. Amazingly, some people actually still have the ability to make you miserable when they're no longer in their bodies. And the reason is because it's within me. It's not like the air conditioner. That love, that peace, and simultaneously that misery is not emanating out of them into me in a way that I have no control over. Love is within me. Joy is within me. Peace is within me. That person triggers my own internal peace production mechanism, joy production mechanism, where that person triggers my patterns that lead to misery. But it's all happening in me. It's all happening in me. And so, and again, we know this also because when you, if you alter your state of consciousness, and this isn't, I'm not recommending this, but just for anybody who ever has, we know it's true. If you alter your state of consciousness chemically, alcohol, drugs, some medicines even, you react differently to the world. You see the world differently, literally. Your vision literally changes. Your reaction to things literally change. So it's just a very, very potent reminder. It's all in me. It's not actually about that person. See, look, I've changed a little bit of chemicals in me, and look how differently I react. Again, not a path I'm suggesting, but just a way that gives us even further evidence that it's in me. And so the question becomes, okay, so how can I have my peace production manufacturing unit on? My love production manufacturing unit on, regardless of who's there. How can I uncap the well of joy? Why do I need someone else to say something that triggers a domino reaction in me that pulls off that cap? If it's all happening in me, why can't I do it? And the truth is we can. But it's just a completely different focus. Either I'm looking at you to do it, or I'm looking inward to do it. And the more I look inward, the more I realize, oh yeah, wow, that joy is there. The peace is there. I can access that anytime. Yeah, you're going to do your thing. You're going to say your thing. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to activate my misery production plant. You've just said something. You've just done something. That's in its own space. Doesn't have to trigger that in me. Those controls are in my hands. And so the more that we can keep remembering that, the last thing that happens with that is we then become energetic transmitters of the joy of the peace. And so even though it's not about changing other people, that actually ends up becoming a byproduct. Don't go into it for that. Because then rather than focusing on yourself, again, you're still focused on others. Okay, has my love changed you yet? Has my peace changed you yet? How can you still be yelling at me? You know, look, I'm emanating peace. Can't you feel it? You know, you've got to let it just be a byproduct. But it is a byproduct. Because as you transmit that, it does change the energetic vibrations of the area. You know, there was a period of time in which, in Western science, I mean, in India, they've always talked about energy, but there was a time in the West where it was all matter. Then, you know, the New Age started coming and people started talking about vibrations, but it was really looked upon as very wishy-washy and New Agey and, you know, by serious people, whether serious scientists or serious spiritual people, because the whole vibration thing just sounded a little bit too wishy-washy. But now, literally, scientifically, what we know is that thoughts, our brain waves, literally emanate frequencies into the atmosphere. And they actually can now be read with brain scan machines that are not hooked up to your brain, that are inches away from your brain. So I'm literally emanating frequency, vibrations, that are being picked up by a machine. Well, if a machine can pick them up, then certainly the energetic beings with whom I'm living can pick them up. And so that's a byproduct of staying grounded yourself in yourself.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin, with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. In words, I can understand, how is all time happening now? Well, this is another fun intersection of science and spirituality. So, quantum physics speaks to us about the space-time continuum, speaks to us about the field. Now, I am far from an expert in it, but my understanding from the quantum physics perspective is that all of space-time is part of this field, that we used to think it was all very linear. We used to think that time began over here and went like this. We thought that space began over here and, you know. But as our understanding of quantum physics has changed, what we realize actually is it's not so much about space-time as it is about the field in which space and time take place. And that field has the ability to change, shape, form. And so as the field shifts, space-time folds in, expands out. And that's the quantum physics aspect of it. From the spiritual side, I don't think it's so much a matter of it's all happening right now in this instant, as that it's all happening on different levels and different planes. And so, for example, it's not that you are simultaneously 5 and 85. It's that you as a being, the 5-year-old you, the 50-year-old you, the 85-year-old you, have actually always existed. This is where, at the depth of spirituality, what we're taught is you're never born, you never die, there was never a time you didn't exist, there never will be a time you don't exist. Not that the body doesn't know time, the body absolutely knows time. And it's not all simultaneous. And the reason that you know that is, as we age, there's a very predictable set of things that happen. They happen at a very predictable speed, at predictable times. You know, okay, you're going to, you know, get wrinkles at this time. You're going to approximately, you know, give or take a few years, but your hair is going to start to go gray at this time. You're going to start to get wrinkles at that time. You're going to start to lose bone mass at this time. I mean, we know what happens. It doesn't happen to 5-year-olds or 15-year-olds. Unless they're sick, unless something has gone awry. So that on that level, it's not all simultaneous. This is the wave ocean phenomenon. Every wave that ever will take place currently exists in the ocean. Every wave that has ever taken place currently exists in the ocean. Right? It's all. And yet, at the moment that the wave is at its peak, there it is. It's not an illusion. If you were swimming in that wave and you didn't know how to swim and it were a big wave, you would drown and die, really. Not in an illusion. 10 minutes ago, you were swimming. Now you are drowned and dead. There has been an absolute passage and change in those 10 minutes on one level of existence. And yet when we turn the dial deeper, you were never born. The body has changed shape, much like the wave changed shape. The wave that drowned you is no longer in existence. By the time the lifeguards come out, and sorry for such a morbid example, but by the time the lifeguards come out and drag you from the ocean, the wave is over. The wave has gone back to the ocean. But on one level of existence, on the most physical level of existence, it existed. You existed. There's your footprint in the sand on your way into the ocean. It's there. And when you turn the dial and go deeper, you were never born, you never died. The wave was always just the ocean. It's all just God. This is like... We speak sometimes in here about the teaching of Advaita Vedanta, for example, that tells us everything is an illusion except God, right? It's all God. At the highest, deepest level, the farthest point you can turn that dial, yes. Ask any sage, any rishi, any enlightened being of any religion. It's all God. Anybody who's experienced it knows it's all God. And take a knife to my skin, cut it, blood will come out. Not as an illusion. 10 people watch it, 10 people will tell you blood came out of her arm. 100 people see it, 100 people will tell you blood came out of her arm. They did not make it up. They did not invent it. It was not a mirage. It's just a different turn of the dial. So this is where in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna speaks about death, and Arjun says, forget it, I'm not going to fight. How can I possibly kill my family members? How can I kill my guru? Forget it. It's not worth it. I'm not going to fight. And then the whole Bhagavad Gita comes in which Lord Krishna basically says, oh, really? And exactly on what level of existence are you in charge of who lives and who dies? Really? You, Arjun? You've got that power? You decide. And really? You can kill them? What is there to kill? And that's what the whole Bhagavad Gita takes us through, is the soul cannot be killed, cannot be burned with fire, cannot be dried by the wind, cannot be wet by water. There was no time it didn't exist. There will never be a time it doesn't exist on the highest level. But Lord Krishna even gives it to us on the one level back, on the physical plane, which is, yes, here they are in their physical bodies, and you still don't have the power to kill them. I've given them life. You don't have the power to take that away unless it is all part of this karmic wheel. Past, present, here's the thing. They exist for those at once, for those who can see on that level. Meaning, the enlightened masters. I mean, I've seen this with my Guru Pujaswamiji. He's not bound by these laws of time and space. He knows what happened to you last week, even if you were in a different country or a different city. He knows what's going to happen. He sees it as an entirety. That doesn't mean it's all happening right now. There's a difference. I guess this is the semantic difference. There's a difference between happening right now and existing right now. On this level, it's happening linearly. And here to here already exists. It's like you're going on a journey. You're in your car. You're driving down the freeway. You are not simultaneously at every single exit. You've got to drive that car past exit 10, exit 11, exit 12, exit 13. You cannot be simultaneously at exit 60 where you're going. You have to move sequentially, 10, 11, 12. Each exit a mile. You've got to go that way. And if you were in an airplane or a helicopter or looking at a map or in a spaceship, looking down, well, all of those exits, of course, exist at the same time. They're all here. If you have that vision, you can see it. But in your car, on your journey, exit 10 is not happening at the same time as exit 30. You're at exit 10 at 9 in the morning, depending on your traffic. It's going to be 10:30, 11, 12 by the time you get to exit 60. You begin with a full stomach. You ate breakfast before you got in the car. By the time you get to exit 60, your breakfast has been digested. You're hungry. So your existence is absolutely changing along the way. The fullness, the emptiness isn't existing simultaneously in you. It's happening linearly. And go high enough up, and the whole thing exists at once. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on Om Times Radio.
Join us here on the holy banks of Mother Ganga, in the lap of the towering and beautiful Himalayas, for our annual International Yoga Festival, taking place from March 1st to March 7th every year. Come. Join your global yoga family in a true union of yourself with your divine self. We look forward to welcoming you all. you can go to the website on www.internationalyogafestival.org. Look forward to welcoming you all home to the banks of Mother Ganga.